The interview.
The guy, the legend, the brain behind this operation, Charlie Kirk, joining me here. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You know, what shocked me here is that you've got a bunch of young adults, 16 to 21 or so, and some even younger. They are so wrapped with attention to everything at that stage. And it's always interesting to see when younger people are actually paying attention and are engaged. And it's so inspiring.
Yeah, it's incredible. And it's part of what we've tried to create here at Turning Point USA. It kind of hit me now that, you know, professional sports is unwatchable, right? I used to love professional sports, NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA. The kind of zeal and commitment and intensity from our attendees is almost as if they're supporting a sports team.
Mm-hmm.
They're wearing the jerseys. They're cheering for them. They're following the kind of trades and the movements, like what network is this person with now? And that's actually a really healthy thing, right? Because this is actually way more important than Major League Baseball. This is our country. And so, not to mention, there's calls to action to get involved locally and keep an eye on very powerful people in your local community and run for student body president at your high school or college. And so this gives me hope. And this is just a small sample size of what we want it to become and what we think it can become. And it also, success kind of grows to more success. So when you have an event this size, the next 4,000 students that were on the edge were like, oh, I want to be there too, because it looks really fun and, you know, everyone's having a great time. And so then all of a sudden conservatism becomes more in the mainstream of acceptable, you know, acceptably held beliefs.
Well, especially for younger folks, who the impression that we always get is that the younger you are, the more far to the left you are. And the fact of the matter is, you know, the ones who are getting engaged early on kind of see some of the themes that adults on the conservative side
see. Well, that's right. And there is some truth to that, that when you're younger, you're more idealistic. You don't really understand as much how the world works.
You have life experience.
Yeah, and that also means you probably haven't suffered enough to be a conservative yet, which means you don't know where to put limitations on your own human behavior or on society's own indulgences. So you just kind of think that it's never been tried before. Put me in charge as a 20-year-old sociology student at University of Washington because I read Nietzsche or something, right? Like somehow I'm going to be able to organize society correctly. And that's fine. We hope you grow up. The problem is that we turn a whole country into a college campus.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the permanent infant, basically, what's happened, where you don't have to really ever break out of this kind of college psyche. And I think there's even a place, some could argue there's a place for that. And there used to be, and then they would get older, get a job, whatever. So, yeah, I mean, this hopefully starts to change that. And every one of the students here then goes back to their campuses and then offers a very thoughtful and rational yet and contrarian point of view.
Well, and sometimes it takes that one person to step up and acknowledge their political beliefs to then inspire other kids on campus to say, oh, I also think that way. You know, I have these conversations in the communities of, you know, that homeless policy that is ruining your community. Well, your neighbor also shares that exact same concern, but you're not talking to them.
That's right.
You need some person to step up and say, yeah, here are my beliefs. You're guaranteed to find people around you that support you.
And part of the left's strategy is full out intimidation.
Yeah.
So that kind of communication doesn't exist, because the cost of even mentioning a societal issue that might be against one of the deeply held activist groups of the left, you could lose your job or you could lose your social status. You know this really well in Seattle. I guarantee you there are hundreds of thousands of people that are upset that Seattle is basically, you can't visit Seattle anymore. I was just there and we drove through it. It was unrecognizable. It used to be this beautiful Scandinavian town and everything was super organized and clean. It is a disaster now. And it's because of a lot of different reasons. You'd know it better than I would. And part of it, though, is that people are afraid to speak out against something wrong because they're afraid something's going to happen to them.
And then when you've got this army of supporters who are like you, behind you, it gets so much easier.
That's exactly right. And so there's a in human psychology, it's this is basic stuff. This you don't have to go very deep into you know, Freud or Jung to get there, which is that people want to be accepted, and we are rigged as human beings. Rigged is the wrong word. We're designed, I believe, by a creator to have loss aversion. And when you have a really wealthy society, of course you're going to be afraid of what you're going to lose. And I don't just mean wealthy monetarily or materially. Wealthy in relationships. You know, wealthy in spirit, which I think is decreasing rapidly. So therefore, people say, you know what? Even if there's a homeless guy defecating, even if there's a drag queen at the library, I don't want to lose my job or my kid get kicked off the soccer team. And so they're playing into this psychological impulse of loss aversion.
Charlie Kirk joining me here in Tampa at the Student Action Summit. Have you noticed either a topic or a theme that is catching on specifically with younger folks to get them into this movement?
It's a great question. So we don't even look at any of our speakers' speeches before they talk.
Yeah.
We don't ask them to talk about certain things before they talk. We don't give them any parameters. But what's so amazing every time is that all their speeches are so similar in the ethos, which I just love to see. And I kind of like, hey, we didn't design that, but that it almost is the closest thing to spontaneous order you can see in real time. And look, there are a couple calls to action, which is it's going to cost you. Do it anyway. It's time for bold and dramatic action. You are the future. And quite honestly, I said this and other speakers have agreed, and this is somewhat controversial, but it's true. Our parents have failed us. I mean, they're leaving us a pretty awful set of circumstances here. And so now we're going to have to fix it.
So where does this end? How does this story end?
Yeah, I mean, the optimistic ending is this gets written in the way of, like, the Reagan Revolution. And, you know, there's this massive kind of victory at the end, not necessarily politically because we're an educational organization. But hopefully we can be part of kind of this awakening culturally that can bring us back to meaning.
There you go. Charlie Kirk.
Thank you
so much for stopping by. Really
Thanks,
appreciate
man.
It.
You bet.
The traffic. The interview.
As I told you earlier on in the show, I held a little bit of a contest at my breakout session for the Turning Point USA Student Action Summit, in which students and young adults showed up to take us through why they want to be in broadcasting. And then, of course, we would give them some tips, Michael Knowles and I. And I decided just to hold a contest allowing two of the students, to come on down and deliver their own monologue. So joining me here is someone who pitched an idea that I liked, Mia Hahn from Florida. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You seem very, very nervous.
Yeah, I am.
Why are you so nervous?
Because
tens of thousands of people will be listening to you deliver a monologue?
Yeah.
Why would that make you nervous? You want to get into broadcasting.
Yeah, but I've never done anything like this.
What got you interested in broadcasting?
I always thought it was cool growing up because I watched the news.
Mm-hmm.
But I realized that I really liked politics, and I liked talking about it too. So I thought that broadcasting would be such a fun thing for me to do.
How old are you?
17.
17. So you're still in high school.
Yeah, I'll be 18 very soon.
Nice. Congratulations. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
When did you start getting interested in politics?
I kind of always had like a small interest in it, but it wasn't until around last year I really started to change my political beliefs and I became a conservative.
What do you think got you to change those beliefs?
Seeing the nation like burn and just seeing the agendas that were being pushed and how they were affecting my generation and the harm that it was causing and just the way the nation just went insane.
Yeah. Do you have, you know, classmates who share your political views or are you a little bit on an island?
I'm homeschooled. I do online school, so I don't talk with like I don't talk with any of my classmates, but I do have like social media and I have posted stuff. I post things all the time, and I have had conversations with my friends about politics.
Nice. And they're pretty open-minded?
The Jason Ranch Show.
For the most part,
hesitated a little bit.
Yeah, we've had conversations that have just kind of not gone too well, but mm-hmm. then, like, we've matured, and we've been able to sort out our differences better.
Okay.
So,
nice. Yeah. Well, what's the name of your radio show that we're about to do?
I don't have a radio show.
No, well, you're doing one right now. I'm giving you a chance. We're just calling it the Mia Hahn Show?
Sure, we can do that.
Okay, so what are we going to talk about in the Mia Hahn Show?
Politics and religion.
Let's do it. I love it. So we told everyone they got about 3 minutes to deliver their monologue. And here we go. Welcome to the Mia Hahn Show.
So basically, it's whether or not should they belong. It really depends on the person. So from what I've seen, the religious voters who choose to separate politics and religion seem to either focus more on the policies or the agendas. More specifically, some see politics as more of a policy thing, so that's where the focus is, whereas other voters for a party where they vote for a party because of the agendas that are being pushed. Those who do correlate politics and religion seem to have their focus balanced fairly equal between the two, but I think in the last election in 2020, a lot of like their focus was probably more on the agendas. The agendas got really insane. They were cramming them down our throats so much, and they still are. And a lot of the agendas clashed with religious values. Republicans and conservatives who aren't religious seem to have no issue with religion, unlike Democrats and liberals. A survey actually by the Pew Research Center that was conducted in 2019 showed that 54% of Republicans and 19% of Democrats were friendly towards religion. So that's quite a big difference between the two. However, as of 2020, liberals seem to especially have this growing resentment against religion, but especially Christianity, due to its pro-life beliefs, view on homosexuality, and the critical race theory, since it divides us so much. Sean King, a BLM activist, stated Jesus is not only a lie, but also a, quote, tool of white supremacy, end quote. I was like, what? Since the left doesn't realize the First Amendment exists, they are trying to cancel religion, and especially Christianity, because it clashes with their agenda, with the agendas that they just continue cramming down our throats. Like, you see it in almost everything you watch. I see it in commercials, I see it in movies, TV shows, it's in little kids' TV shows, I've seen it on Disney+. It's insane. So due to all of this, I've seen a lot of just Christians and other religious people compromise their beliefs and morals for the left so they don't get canceled. And I'd say religion is dying in terms of its impact on voters. Cancel culture and all of its propaganda is killing the First Amendment, free thinkers, and religion, and it's doing it very rapidly. And if we don't take a stand now, I fear that the left will rule America before they hand us over to China. You know, and China does not accept religion at all.
Nice. It's a Mia Hahn Show. How do you think that went?
I think it went pretty well.
What inspired that?
Just, I think since I personally am religious, I used to not mix politics and religion myself. Until I started to get more into my faith and I got more into politics.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I was like, and I saw Charlie Kirk and I saw Kayleigh McEnany and they were open about their faith, you know. And I saw how they correlated the two. So then I started thinking from that perspective as well, because I'm open to different perspectives. And I was like, huh, I wonder why other people don't as well. Like, they aren't open to that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And how that impacts how we vote. And then I thought, well, since cancel culture is really attacking religion, all religions, not just Christianity, but since Christianity is the majority, it's really attacking that. I thought, well, how is this going to affect Gen Z and how they're going to vote?
Awesome. Well, look at you. You're very thoughtful. 17-year-olds are usually on TikTok. Are you on TikTok?
I used to be, and then I deleted it.
Okay.
It was
smart.
Controlling my life.
Oh, she made a decision that as an adult I have not been able to make on social media. Mia Hahn, best of luck. Don't take my job in a few years, please.
Okay.
So, you know, if you're going to go and sort of poach a job, don't come to Seattle.
Okay.
But anywhere else, go ahead and kick them out of their positions.
All right.
Mia Hahn, thank you so much for stopping
by. Thank you
so much. I really appreciate it. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show.
The Jason Rand Show.
Always glad to see Seattle radio host Jason Rance.
It's always a pleasure to watch you and a pleasure now to host you.
Jason, I just love your coverage of what's been going on in Seattle.
Jason, this is as bad as it gets in America.
Jason Rance, great to see you. Thank you.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
The one and only Benny Johnson joins me, of course, from Newsmax, and the chief creative officer over at Talking Points or Turning Points USA. We were, just before going on...
I'll take Talking Points USA.
Talking Points USA, too.
Why not?
Because we're dealing with a lot of talking points. And we're dismantling all these talking points. I have to ask you, because I saw you had tweeted about the Democrats going from... The Democrats from Texas, the small caucus, as it were...
Yes.
...headed to D.C. to not do their job.
Yes.
And their heroes, of course, for stalling the Democratic process. Catching COVID on the way.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
What this, irony.
This wrote itself, didn't it?
Yes. They're super spreaders. This was a anti-democratic, anti-constitutional super spreader event that the left has been telling us about. This is it.
Yeah.
All right? This is it. There's no other way to classify it. When you are in defiance of your own state constitution and when you're in defiance of the will of the people in your own state, you are anti-democratic. Democracy. And so their action in the main is, and their action just initially is a repulsive humiliation to the people of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I truly hope that everybody goes and figures out. I read all their names on my social media. Go and primary these people. They are not deserving of your vote. They're a humiliation to your state. And they are actually the they are the abomination of the Alamo, the most famous monument in Texas. The Alamo was, we will stay and fight against all odds, right? This is, we will turn and run and give everyone COVID, which is the opposite.
Tour.
Yes, the opposite of the motto of Texas, the motto of the Alamo, and the opposite of the Texas way.
You look at just some of their tweets, and you can tell very quickly why they're in the minority in Texas. Because it's not like there are no Democrats in Texas. There very clearly are. This is your best and brightest?
They're not sending their best.
It's remarkable, though, right? I mean, could this have gone any worse, even though the media is doing their best to create this impression that they're heroic?
It couldn't have, because they've just been clowned and clowned and clowned, and you can tell. So there's a really easy way to tell if something's not working, because corporate media will drop it. Mm-hmm. Drop it like a hot pocket out of a 400-degree oven, and they dropped these people quickly, right? So when Kavanaugh gets confirmed, dropped. Mm-hmm. You never hear another word about it, right? When Russia... The Russia probe gets released, never hear another word about it, right? It's deep sixed. And these people have been deep sixed so quickly, they went up to the hill, they had their little like sing kumbaya moment, and everyone said, oh, these are not serious people. There was a, I see, Jason, you on Fox, often you are an absolute triumph and patriot, and
thank you.
Love your coverage in Seattle and in Washington, and it is so important. Fox News, Pete Hegseth, brought one of these guys on. I'm sure you saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's humiliating.
It was the most embarrassing thing I've seen on cable television. And that's all I do all day is watch cable TV. And so this is a very high bar. And I watch CNN, which is just like humiliation porn all day long. And this was the largest, this was like an execution, right, via cable TV.
Mm-hmm.
And these people were not ready for prime time. And as Trump said, they weren't sending their best.
What's fascinating in all of this, you know, they say they were vaccinated, and yet these were breakthrough cases, which obviously happen. But that's a lot of breakthrough cases, right, from one small group of people. And I can't help but listen to the new narrative of Fox News and Trump supporters are responsible for all the COVID cases. Is it also possible that they're downplaying the breakthrough cases? And I say that not to tell people not to get vaccinated. I got vaccinated. I think you should if you want, in consultation with your doctor. And vaccines work. However, we also know sometimes they don't work. And it feels like we're underplaying that part.
My wife, who's a medical professional, and who with whom I take all of my medical advice, right? We have children, she advises our family, and she is a medical professional. Lucky me, I actually married my medical professional, and so that's how we make decisions as a family. I get asked about vaccine 400 times a day. That's what I tell people. Talk to the people who know you and care about you and know your and know who you are, and don't listen to guys like me on the internet. That's how you go wrong. Right? In both camps, that's how you go wrong, actually. 100%. Pro-vax, anti-vax.
100%.
That's how you go wrong, listening to idiots on the internet like me.
It's the weird part about this, and I think it makes vaccine hesitancy more of an issue, is when any conversation at all about the vaccine that isn't just go get the vaccine, go get the vaccine, go get the vaccine, is deemed anti-vaxxer. And again, so I talked about a couple months ago to one of the young people in this country who ended up developing myocarditis after getting the vaccine. And the reason we talked about it was because I wanted to make sure that other young people who get the vaccine can recognize what a serious side effect could look like so they can just talk to their doctor. Because myocarditis can kill you if it's not treated. But you're not allowed to have any of those conversations. Doesn't that make folks more conspiratorial? It's almost making me conspiratorial. And I got the vaccine, and I want people to get the vaccine.
Right. That's exactly right. Don't think about pink elephants, right? Don't think about pink elephants. Like, if you demand something of someone, they have an instinct to do the opposite. Don't walk on the grass. We're very, by the way, independent people, and we talked about the Alamo earlier. We're very independent people. The most treasured moments in American history was independence, and whether it's the storming of the beaches of D-Day or whether it's the shot heard around the world at Lexington and Concord, independence is in our blood. And so forcing something upon us is never going to work. Yeah. It's not a great tactic. It fundamentally misunderstands how America is formed and how we are knit together as American people. And frankly, it hasn't you can see that they call it vaccine hesitancy. I call it your personal choice, my body, my choice. But if you want to look at the lowest percentages, it's among minority people, specifically black people.
It's like 35% vaccination rate as of the last CDC data dump.
So what are you well, – this is CDC data here. Guys, this isn't working, right? This isn't working. I just moved to Florida, but I lived in a majority-minority neighborhood in Washington, D.C. All of my neighbors were black. My entire football team that I coached, every player was black. I can tell you this directly from the community that I lived in, that – they don't like being ordered to do things, and they certainly don't like government mandates.
Yeah.
It's not like a great thing. And so if you want to change your tactic here, let people review the research. Specifically, the messaging should be go to a trusted medical professional who knows you and loves you and cares about you. And that's how you'll make the smartest, wisest decision for your own personal health, which is the most valuable thing you own. 100%. There is nothing more valuable.
Well, my coffee machine is actually amazing.
You could argue
very
the same.
Expensive.
Yeah, you could argue.
Betty
same.
Johnson joining me here at Media Row. You're a very prolific tweeter. What are the stories that catch your attention? What are the topics that you see and you say, okay, there's something here?
The founding of our country. I'm not a smart man, right? So I'm very room temperature IQ kind of guy.
I'd be clear.
75, you know, nice, comfortable home. Yeah, not a smart man.
Yeah.
But I am a man who can understand simple concepts. The way that the founding document, the Declaration of Independence, was written was through the lens of natural rights, a right that you have in nature and that God gave to you. A creator gave you these rights. They are very explicit in this. And so when life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, these are rights. Those get then projected onto the Bill of Rights. Mm-hmm. That is then put down in pen right here. We're going to delineate these things. In that right is the freedom of speech, assembly, and association in the first one. It is there, number one, because if you said something bad, if you tweeted something bad about King George back in the day, then you'd get locked up and shipped off to England and never come back.
Yeah, a lot of Twitter trolls at that point, by the way.
A lot. But they had cannons. So, Joe Biden wants to tell you that those were banned back in the day. That's a lie. That's a totally different topic. The point I'm trying to make here, and having a long-winded way of making it, is that these, when you attack the First Amendment, you are attacking, in our founding, something that the Creator gave you, and that the government's job it is solely to protect. Mm-hmm. And so when Jen Psaki says that she is colluding with Facebook to silence and censor the free speech, it is definitionally unconstitutional, and the President of the United States swears to uphold that Constitution in his first thing he does with his hands on the Bible. And so, therefore, his entire administration stemming from that is in violation of the Constitution by working with one of the most powerful organizations in the world right now, undoubtedly, maybe one of the most powerful in human history.
Yeah.
I think it's hard to argue that, to silence Americans. So, therefore, that is the most important story, I think, in the world. And
totally.
The fact that most Republicans aren't talking enough about it is very bad.
What's fascinating to me in this case is Facebook kind of invited this kind of treatment. They went into this partnership already, right? They communicated with Dr. Fauci. They actively said, we are going to take a Democrat talking point and make it policy. And then it came out and bit them.
Right. And you
Which
can't.
Which always happens.
That's exactly correct.
It always happens.
There's a name. There's a name for it when corporations and the government become the same.
Mm-hmm.
We have a exciting name for that. It's called fascism. And it is fascistic to use corporations to attack the American people at your order. More Republicans need to say it.
I agree. Just don't make the Nazi-specific comparisons, please, folks. That's the one thing that I'm just over.
That's why I say fascistic.
I love that.
Yeah.
And by the way, saying fascistic is very hard to say in a way that doesn't sound like you accidentally said a cuss word. It's
yes,
true.
Correct.
And that's every single time I say fascistic, I get very nervous that I'm going to say the F word.
I stand in the mirror every morning.
Benny Johnson. Follow him on Twitter, Benny Johnson. He is, of course, the host of the Benny Report over at Newsmax. And not Talking Points USA, but Turning Points USA. My talking point is to go follow him on Twitter at Benny Johnson. Thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate
Thank you, Jason.
It.
The Jason Rantz Show.
Jason Rantz, Seattle radio host, joins us now.
Jason, you're the perfect guest on this.
Jason Rantz, welcome back, Jason.
I see you often on other programs here.
Jason, what's going on?
Jason, thanks for coming on.
The Quick Hit.
Some bad news for those of you who love the idea of having Payne Field be so close to you in Snohomish County, thinking that you will get to avoid the long lines over at SeaTac Airport. We can tell you now, United Airlines will be officially suspending all of its service out of Payne Field starting in early October. Now, right now, you're not really getting that much from United over at Payne Field in Everett. Right now, all you're getting is one daily express flight between Payne and Denver International. So you're already not really being super served by United Airlines there. That's going to be discontinued starting October 5th, according to a statement that was reported first by the Points Guy. United said it's going to continue to serve the region with nonstop service to Seattle from the locations that they go, D.C., L.A., Houston, New York, Denver, San Francisco. And according to the statement, it said Payne Field continues to enjoy strong passenger demand. Our flights are departing full. And our hometown carrier, Alaska Airlines, remains committed. So, statement coming from Payne Field is that things are going strong here. In fact, they said Alaska's announcing new routes to Boise and Tucson. That's supposed to start at some point in the next coming months. And they said, we've had conversations with other carriers interested in starting service and remain confident
that we will be back at full steam later this year. Now, I think it's unfair to look at this and see it as instructive per se, right? If United Airlines services are not doing well, but Alaska is doing well, then I would not blame Payne Field. It's possible that there's just not enough demand for the Denver route, and that's all that this is about. But in the back of my mind, I'm also wondering how much COVID played a role in all of this. I mean, COVID hit Payne Field especially hard because just by sheer nature of what it is they do, they don't have that many routes. Whereas in SeaTac, yes, they got hit really, really hard, but they still had so much more to start from. So when they get hit hard, they still have some offerings. You were still able to get around, but it was already limited at Payne Field to begin with. So I really hope that this is just COVID related and it's just temporarily an issue, because if not, Payne Field is going to be in trouble. And look, there's a lot of economic opportunities to be had by Payne Field. It is not just about the convenience of someone who lives, say, in Sultan or in Mukilteo, having to get all the way down to SeaTac and deal with those lines when you can just get to Payne and it not be a pain. So it's about the economic opportunities around it. You've got Boeing that's nearby. You've got businesses that are nearby. People traveling into the area to be at Boeing, workers, managers, stuff like that. Well, they're going to take Payne and they're going to spend their money in those businesses around the airport. And so for them to go to SeaTac, all you're doing is, no, you're diverting money, essentially. I'd rather keep that money in Snohomish. So we'll see what ends up happening here. What I think is incredibly important, though, is to understand it is still happening in the context of a pandemic and the pandemic's impact on the travel industry. So hopefully things will get better.
The Last Rants.
With that said, we wrap things up here in Tampa. I'm back in Seattle later this evening, and we'll be broadcasting from our studio tomorrow. And I'm here at Radio Row for the Student Action Summit. And it was weirdly inspiring. And I talked about this a little bit yesterday. I say weirdly inspiring because I don't usually get inspired, certainly not by kids who, for the most part, and I said this with Mia, are spending time on their phones. They're on TikTok, they're on Snapchat, they're on Instagram, they're on the apps that I don't even know about at this point, but probably will when they're no longer cool. And they are engaged in themselves and entertainment and frivolous stuff. They're also dealing with COVID and all of that impact it had on their high school experiences, their college experiences, ruined in some cases. And yet they felt compelled not just to show up to a conference in Tampa, Florida, from all over the place. I met a few people from Seattle U grad, a UW kid. They came here and they actually paid attention. I remember when I was younger, I remember just last week being put in a meeting and starting to lose my attention. My attention span only goes so far. You get bored. You get less engaged. You pay less attention. But let me tell you something. Here, they were all paying attention. They were listening to what was out there, what was being said. They were listening to the speeches. They were listening at these breakout sessions. I delivered a breakout session with Michael Knowles. And people showed up, and they were actually paying attention. Not pretending to. They didn't have to be there. They could have taken their lunch break. They've been paying attention. This is one of the weirdest media rows that I've ever experienced, in the sense that usually there are a lot of people mulling around while speeches are going on. There were some people mulling around, but for the most part, all the students here, they didn't leave that conference center. They didn't leave that auditorium to listen to the speech. They listened to the speeches. That tells you that a lot of people who are in that age range that we generally think, number one, are far to the left, or number two, disinterested in politics, it tells you that maybe our preconceptions are wrong. Maybe the future is looking bright. If we can get these kids to make an impact, and it starts by getting more information and connecting with others and feeling inspired, There's so many of you who have kids who you are raising to be really intelligent, ethical, moral adults. And maybe some of you are worried about getting them in front of political news and whatnot because you want them to have a childhood. And I think that's incredibly important, and you should. But based on the interest level here, I think it is okay for you to start leaning in just a little bit more, if you're not already doing it, to expose them to some of the news on what's going on in our cities. Because as you heard with the two kids we had on the show this segment today, Jason and Mia, one from Florida, one from North Carolina, both 17 years old, they're connecting the dots. They're hearing the themes of what's happening on the left that is ruining some of our cities, many of our cities. They're actually paying attention, and they want to get involved, and they want to push back. I guarantee you, based on talking to them and hearing them here, they weren't told this. They're not parroting someone else's talking points. They may have gotten some help to get to that point, but that was their thoughts. Those are their words. I guarantee you that you've got kids right now who, if you expose them in a responsible way, would start to help us all in taking back our communities. And so tonight I want you to think whether or not you have one of those kids who could join this fight and be an integral part of what we need to do to win back our cities, our state, and our country. And that's the last rants from Turning Points USA Student Action Summit. I'll see you in Seattle tomorrow. It's the Jason Rant Show.